For decades, Alaska's economy has thrived or struggled, primarily because of the price of oil. Our shipping distance from the rest of America creates challenges for diversifying the revenue potential for the state, but finding new ways to boost the economy is crucial for future stability, and is the aim of a new five-year public-private stimulus plan called Northern Opportunity, Alaska's Economic Strategy. What's in it? We'll find out today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello. Thanks for joining us today for Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. What are the barriers to moving Alaska away from an oil-dependent economy to one that is diverse, thriving, and stable for the future? Alaskans are hardworking, creative, and have wide-ranging experiences. So what keeps us so tethered to fossil fuel dollars, and how do we move beyond them? Just yesterday, the state opened a public comment period on a new draft strategy with a mission to tackle that very issue. You now have 29 remaining days to provide your input on the draft called Northern Opportunity. And here to tell us how it came together is Ethan Tyler. Ethan is the manager of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Division of Economic Development.
Thank you, Lori.
Hi, Ethan. Thanks for being here. Lori Wolf is the president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group. Hi, Lori.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And Rick Thomas is president and CEO of the Chariot Group. Hi, Rick.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
And you out there listening can also join the conversation. Did you help provide feedback on the plan? Do you have the next big idea for Alaska's economic future? Join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. That's the statewide number. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Ethan, I have to say that this concept sort of begs the question, why is this just happening now? I mean, we've been in a boom and bust cycle in the state for a very long time. Shouldn't we have undertaken such an effort about 20 years ago?
Well, yeah, hindsight being 2020, of course. I will say that there are a number of similar attempts that have taken place over the years, and there are also regional strategies throughout the state. So, so the pieces of this particular effort have been going on for years. And we utilized, regional strategies that are already in existence, and we've utilized earlier efforts at similar projects to inform this particular strategy. So yes, it'd be nice if we had a statewide comprehensive economic development strategy on the books 20 years ago. But at the same time, efforts have been taking place to identify opportunities for moving the economy forward for a long time.
The release from the Department of Commerce says the draft is the result of 8 months of consultations across the state. The list of communities spans from Utqiagvik, formerly known as Barrow, to Juneau, and a lot of points in between. How did you decide what the conversation should be? What were you seeking when you went to the communities to have these conversations?
Really, we were seeking input from Alaskans, and we wanted to ensure that we got a good representation from all regions of the state and from kind of all walks of life from around the state, and we wanted to hear from people about what they viewed as Alaska's economic future, or what they saw as economic opportunity for Alaska. And my hope is that we've integrated all of those voices well into the strategy and kind of mixed those in with economic development best practices and put forward a plan that represents Alaskans' ideas on the economy.
If you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're discussing Northern Opportunity, Alaska's economic strategy, a five-year statewide plan that was just released yesterday. There is a draft on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can go there and take a look at it if you would like. The state is looking for comments. There's a 30-day window of time open right now. You can join our conversation if you have ideas about what the future economy should look like in the state and ideas for diversifying it and stabilizing it. 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK statewide. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I want to go over the six strategic areas outlined in the plan, but first, Lori Wolf with 4-Acre Group. A lot of Alaskans, I think about pickaxes, chainsaws, drill rigs, fishing vessels when they think of economic development. Yet you represent the nonprofit world. How do you see nonprofits helping to drive the economy of the future for Alaska?
Well, thank you for inviting me. And I'm just very excited that the nonprofit sector is part of this conversation. It's long overdue. Across Alaska, on average, we're 12% of the workforce, more than 50% of the workforce in rural and remote rural Alaska. And so we are a driver of the economy in many parts across the state. So it's been exciting to be part of this process with the state. We're pleased to be invited to the table. And absolutely, in our state, we're kind of an invisible workforce. We talk about industry. And when I first started going to these meetings around this economic plan, it occurred to me more and more and more as we sat in those conversations that we were talking about the industry. We were talking about fishery or oil or timber, but we weren't talking about who does the work. And so the assumption was that for-profit business does the work. So we talk about fisheries as if it was only for-profit industry that did it. But in reality, in Alaska, we are interconnected. Our sectors are interwoven. So it's government and the nonprofit sector and the for-profit sector all coming together to do fisheries work. No single industry can exist in a single sector. And that's not how Alaska works. So we're thrilled to be part of this conversation because Alaska has a very strong nonprofit sector that is an economic driver. And we'd like to be less invisible when we do that work. And that requires both us to be at these kinds of conversations, but also for us to be able to tell our story better and for us to be able to track that kind of numbers. We don't really track sec by sector in our state when we look at industry numbers.
All right. And Rick Thomas with the Chariot Group. This is, when I looked at your website, says audio, visual in Alaska, 4 other states. Tell us a little bit more about what the Chariot Group does and how you see this fitting in into a growth industry for Alaska. Or is this the door into other business creation through your group?
So specifically, the Chariot Group is involved in remote communication and collaboration. We like to say that we reduce the distance between ideas, right? How do you bring people together when, especially in Alaska, when you have such a distributed workforce? So from a Chariot Group perspective, that's our space, video conferencing and things of that nature. But more importantly, related to this discussion, because of our involvement in that tech industry, we have some insight as to some of the changes that are coming along. And I actually think there's two things going on here. One, there's the traditional ebb and flow of oil prices and how they impact the state. But then there's also this huge technology shift that's coming along. And so that complicates an already complicated issue. As an example, there's big discussions on how do you create more jobs. Well, in the past, that might have been just find more oil. Yeah. But now, due to workforce automation, artificial intelligence, robotics, things of that nature, that becomes a bigger issue. How do we plan past that? There was recently an article in the New York Times where oil sector is beginning to step things back up in Texas, as an example, but The jobs aren't necessarily returning because it's moving more to an automated process. And so from my involvement, the Chariot Group's involvement, it's adding that component and perhaps level of complication to the discussion.
Well, we're certainly seeing those kinds of that movement toward more automation, more robotics in a lot of different areas. And that's one of the big challenges of people that are hoping for jobs to come back in certain sectors. Those jobs may not be there, but perhaps there's a new pathway to employment for people that have to take care of the robotics. And so that might be the next career avenue too.
Absolutely. It's just a shift, right? And we have to look at the tools that we use to manage our success or failure in the past. Those tools may not be relevant any longer because we're measuring something different.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-TALK-550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to go to the phones for a moment. Jim is in Fairbanks. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My idea?
Do you have an idea?
I do. Certainly not a new one. I look for a diversified economy in Alaska to include wildlife and, of course, tied to the visitor industry, living wildlife. But it'll take a major shift of thinking in our Alaska Board of Game and in our legislature who confirm Game Board appointees so that we have a structure that supports the idea that Alaska's wildlife, which of course is spectacular and known worldwide, survives as living wildlife. There is, I think, an enormous future there already. Tourism, of course, has very big numbers in terms of what it brings into the state. But mainly I look for a change in leadership and management concerning wildlife. I think most people come to Alaska, including Alaskans themselves, of course, who are already here, look for a different wildlife experience other than hunting and trapping. And, of course, that will remain whatever it is. But we need to have an enlightened approach to wildlife management that values the experience of seeing wildlife in this natural wildland setting. So I believe that's entirely sustainable. It already ranks high. And I would like to see it included in discussion and in enactment of policy.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is absolutely an area that I had also planned to discuss today is the various facets of tourism. So thanks for raising that, and we'll absolutely get to that. Let's stick to the phones for just a moment, and we're going to go over to Bethel now from Fairbanks. Yakov is in Bethel. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
We're just fine. Do you have a question or a comment for today?
Yes, I do. I have been having several experiences in the municipal as well as the tribal governments and throughout the state. I don't know if anyone has ever talked about this to the extent that I am right now, but under the municipal governments, the city is funded by the state only from January to June, and they have to scramble and find funding from July until December. And there is no way that they're able to function correctly and fund their governments, and that's contributes to low self-esteem as well as not being able to provide for the families in each of these places. And that's throughout the state of Alaska and all of the tribal places where people live throughout the state. The other thing is that the tribal governments aren't given adequate funding to fund their departments, and so this is why there is very bad and maybe even inability for these governments to do their reports on time. And most of the time they're given only half of the funding, just like the municipal.
Okay, I'm gonna jump in here, Yakov, because I want to let our guests have a chance to respond. I'm not sure what you're talking about when you say that the state's only providing funding for half the year. There's part of what he's discussing here is the very complicated layering of local governments, tribal governments, state governments, and the various funding revenue streams that come to all of those places. But Ethan, maybe you want to it was my plan to move into the rural plan later, but let's talk about that now since it was raised, and then we can back up to some of the ideas about tourism. But let's start with the idea that 10 communities are being asked to participate in business retention and expansion. Have you identified them? Where in rural Alaska are you hoping to maybe find some spots to focus in on and try and enhance the business climate?
Sure. Well, a couple of things. You know, one, so business retention and expansion is a program that is popular through like International Economic Development Council, and it is shown as a best practice in communities. To that end, the Division of Economic Development, I think 3 years ago, started to implement a business retention and expansion program, and so the framework exists to pick that up and move that particular activity forward. Typically, you know, we try to work with, for one, we manage the Alaska Regional Development Organization program. We lovingly refer to them as our ARDRs. And that's a network of, you know, boots on the ground, local economic development organizations. And so when we initially started working in business retention and expansion, we reached out to the ARDRs across the state. Some of them were participating in that. We had partners in municipal governments around the state. And we got good data from the first part of the program, which is interviewing businesses and getting a sense of, you know, where businesses are and how they're feeling about things. And then the next step is to really implement that data. So I think if we can take that program that's been a little bit dormant over the last year or so and pick that up and continue to move that forward and utilize, you know, the information that we have and gather more and work with our partners in local economic development organizations and municipalities and tribal entities that working with 10 communities would be a reasonable goal.
And have they been identified, or you're still just kind of, this is at the beginning stages, so?
Yeah, I have them identified kind of in my head. but
do they know this?
Some of them do, I'm sure. But, you know, I think that in order to have a successful statewide business retention and expansion program means that we're working in communities that are both urban and rural, and, you know, on the rail belt and off the rail belt, and making sure that we have good representation and we're getting good feedback from all businesses across the state.
Sure. And I think that, to be clear, what Yakov was talking about was government funding. But this whole idea, if I'm understanding it correctly, is spurring growth beyond trying to look to government to fund services to a very large degree in the future.
Yeah, and I do want to address that, because one of the things that we heard through our strategy committee and through some of the conversations around the state was, There needs to be a little bit of a mentality shift that moves from, and potentially from a municipal standpoint or a local government standpoint, away from grant funding for specific projects and moving more towards like a bonding structure or a different type of financing, or private investment. And one of the goal areas is finance and investment. One of the things that came out of this was providing technical resources to some of these communities to not only allow them to receive these type of different financing, but education on how you go about that, and finding alternative ways to just grant funding some of these projects in their communities.
Rick Thomas with the Chariot Group, you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, just there's two sides to the funding equation, right? One is how many dollars are available, and the second is how do you reduce cost, right? And delivering the type of education and communication that's required for this economic development program, the growth, the resources that are necessary to take people to new places is expensive, right? Especially if we're hopping on planes to do that and delivering people. So part of that solution, it was going to be, how do we deliver this information in a reliable manner over distance, right? And that came up a lot as we were talking about this development program. There's more bandwidth now being delivered across the North Slope. We're positioned to see substantial changes there, and new things will be possible. So, to the caller's question about, hey, how do we get more resources? Sometimes it's not more about how do we get more money. It's how do we act more efficiently? And given the current environment we're operating within, investment in those types of efficiencies may pay dividends not only immediately, but as our workforce changes more to an information economy, like we had talked about previously, and sharing highly technical skills, that may come to bear and help solve some of that funding issue at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Don is in Anchorage. Hi, Don.
Hi. You two are so right on. That's exactly what when the guy asked me what I want to talk about. I said, you can go back to the 1950s if you want to, when the Eisenhower administration, they used to run cartoon characters on TV about trying to get people to come up with new ideas and accept things and push aside some of the old philosophies. This is when we were going. This is when I first started to go over from coal-fired furnaces to gas in your home. And difference being health, among other things. But the point is, I tried years ago, decades ago, right here in Alaska, along with a few other people, to try and get some things going up here. And what we ran into was, well, that's not the way we've been doing it all the years, and this is the way we're going to continue to do it. And so long as you have that kind of a mentality that you're going to be fighting, you have got to be very innovative. You've got to be able to show these people, look, stop being a primitive Pete over here, and let's go ahead and get moving forward. Because if you don't, it's going to be a downhill spiral is what it's going to be. You're going to lose more jobs. You're going to see things go down further and further unless you encourage people to get busy and come up with some new ideas and more or less put their money where their mouth is. We see about bank investments and a host of other things. If they're really interested in the communities, why don't they get busy and help the communities develop?
All right. Well, I want to drill down on some of those ideas. Thanks so much for the call, Don. You're right. It takes innovative, creative thinking to get things going. Rick, you mentioned the broadband that's coming into the upper part of the state, the North Slope area. What can we really realistically expect that to do? It seems like it will still be expensive for people because these are small communities. So it's the cost may still be somewhat prohibitive to have high speed internet in small communities that may be the doorway into some sort of economic innovations. But what are you seeing that really could crack that door open a bit? Just bringing in high-speed internet isn't the final answer. So what else is happening that you're seeing that can help spur that economic development?
Well, right now you have high cost and low bandwidth, right? You know, it's extremely expensive for internet that's delivered over satellite. You know, some schools and villages just have the tiniest amount that are shared amongst literally hundreds of people. If you're delivering fiber across the North Slope, even if it remains expensive, and I think you'll see, you know, certainly in the longer term, a substantial reduction in cost, and I would guess in the short term. That is not my area of expertise, but that's what I would forecast personally. So I get a huge amount of additional bandwidth into some of these communities. That's information. That's possibilities. Yeah, now, the internet or bandwidth specifically doesn't solve a problem in and of itself. It just creates access, right? You still have to deliver something over it to really make a difference. And there's two components to that. One is what are the resources that we deliver? And second, and to the caller's statement, how do you change the mindset?
Yes.
Right, there's a joke that says how many people, you know, want to change, and an entire audience, how many people think we need to change, and the entire audience raises their hand, and then how many people want to change themselves, and nobody raises their hand, right? It's going to mean getting uncomfortable as a community, and this is the beginning of that, I think.
Leaning into discomfort, in other words. Lori Wolf with the 4-Acre Group, how can nonprofits help this lean in?
Well, I think we're doing it already. I mean, I think if we look at where innovation often pops up in our not only in Alaska but around the world, you'll find nonprofits at the heart of that. So, you know, I think that moment of being invisible, right? We think, oh, this is just, you know, government gonna create this great plan and they're gonna bring it out to these communities and magically it's all gonna get solved, or, you know, we're gonna have that fabulous technology and we're all gonna just be great. And, you know, I mean, I think yes, and we have to talk to those organizations that are on the ground who know their communities best and really bring them to the table and say, how do we do this together, and what have you already figured out? I mean, Alaskans are remarkable in figuring out how to make their communities work. Some of the most incredible inventions I've ever seen have just happened because people have had to figure out how to make it work. How do you live in this environment? How do we get information out and back? How do we serve the people that need to be served, that want to be served? How do we help our environment? Those questions are constantly being asked and answered in our nonprofit sector. And so how do we have those conversations with them, not at them or for them, but with them, and really think about how we bring those folks to the table as part of these conversations?
All right, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation on Northern Opportunity, Alaska's economic strategy, a 5-year plan that was just released yesterday. 30-day comment period is open, and you can find the document at our website, alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Their online, evening, and campus-based courses make education accessible and will fit into any busy schedule. Be motivated by a devoted faculty and creative, independent-minded students. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. Moving life ahead with APU. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing Northern Opportunity, Alaska's economic strategy, a new five-year statewide plan. There's a lot of regional economic development plans, but this is a statewide plan. And one of the questions I had was about that the existing plans that may be out there, regional plans. Where are they, and how will you sort of stitch them together, if that's the idea, into this broader plan?
Yeah, well, you know, earlier in the show I mentioned our regional development organizations. Many of them have these regional strategies, and they live, you know, they live within that organization. And I should also mention, you know, this statewide strategy was done in partnership with the not only with the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development, who's a really close partner to the Division of Economic Development, but also with the Federal Economic Development Administration. And they actually have a prescribed way that you do a comprehensive economic development strategy. And so all of the regional, for the most part, the regional strategies are Economic Development Administration or EDA endorsed. And so that's the same with our statewide one. And so I would say that we're not looking to stitch them together at this point. The document that has been released is actually an effort to have stitched these together. And so identifying, you know, what some of the similar concerns are from region to region, where there are some differences. And I think that there's that flavor in the document where there are, you know, we did try to stick to more of a statewide overview, but at the same time, you know, there are definitely regional differences. You know, one of the things in our business development goal area was maritime, the maritime sector. Mm-hmm. And that was actually informed a lot by Southeast Conference and Southeast Conference's Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, where they call out the maritime sector, everything from fish to working on boats to the support services, as a real opportunity for economic growth and development. But that also transfers all the way up the coast to, you know, to Whittier and to Seward and to Dutch Harbor and even further north than that, where, you know, port facilities come into play. So,
right.
So anyway, that's a long answer to a short question, but, you know, we did lean on a lot of our partners around the state and a lot of their economic development strategies to put this together.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-TALK. You can also call 550-8422 if you're in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, or email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Are there unique new concepts in some of the regional plans? Did you find things as you were going about kind of gathering up information that really stood out as, wow, who thought of this? Or is it more trying to enhance existing businesses?
Yes.
All right.
yes to all of those, of course. We did come across some new things while we were out there. You know, one of the things that we heard a lot, and this was really interesting to me, you know, Arctic development, opportunity in the Arctic, and where people couldn't necessarily put their finger on like one thing, the concept of Arctic opportunity was heard pretty loud and clear, but not just in communities that are directly affected, but also, you know, we heard about it from folks in Anchorage, and we heard about it from folks in Juneau. So it's something that's on everybody's mind. So that was actually pretty interesting to hear. But I also think that there have been all these ideas in a lot of different places, and where we did come up and find some new concepts to put into this plan. But at the same time, I feel really strongly that we've taken a lot of ideas, and I'm doing hand motions, and I realize I'm on the radio, but we're taking all of these ideas.
You'll be on TV again, or also, I should say.
Right. But we're taking a lot of ideas that have been in a lot of different places, and we're putting them into one place. And so it allows us to have this living document that we can go back to, and these ideas are all in one place. So it's not from, they're not all over the place. They're in this one centralized place.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Dave is in Cordova. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Very, very timely show. I coincidentally am retired out of the maritime sector and encouraged numerous people to explore that as a real viable possibility of employment. I'm actually kind of glad to see this day come. It was inevitable, and fortunately we're prepared for it. I've watched Alaska since being born here back in the territory, and it had to come to the point where we diversify, and at the same time, we're going to have to take our medicine in terms of an economy that's grown beyond its carrying capacity. And it begs the question of how far are we willing to go to subsidize it as it exists right now. I think we're right up against that at the moment, and we're going to have to make hard choices. But even though we're going to see a diminished economy, in my opinion, I think we've got the means to overcome and rebuild with the young people who are here in the state now, and with the telecom possibilities, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. One thing I think was a real short-sighted mistake on the part of the legislature was killing the Alaska Science and Technology grants. I think that should be refounded with a provision that if whatever business grows ends up giving a certain amount back to the foundation funding as a means of sustaining it. Going tech is pretty important. And in closing, I'd like to say I think getting into the permanent fund, messing with its formula is anathema. It's the worst thing we could possibly do, because it is such an economic monster that will only grow stronger if we take care of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the call, Dave, and your thoughtful comments. He raises a good point about as we're dealing with budget deficit, the chipping away at programs that help spur economic development or innovation is a concern. How are you looking at that? And maybe this is a question for the non-state employee folks that are on the program today. Lori Wolf and Rick Thomas, what are your thoughts about, let's start with you, Lori, about the concern level of just what he was referencing when it comes to less funding for spurring innovation?
Yeah, it's not just less funding for innovation, it's less funding for fundamental essential services across the state. So, you know, our message has been, you know, we can't cut our way out of this problem. Because cutting, honestly, when we cut the nonprofit sector, who is doing the work, in many communities around helping people providing essential services in our state, when we just try to cut our way out of that, in fact, we make it more expensive. So the way that our Constitution is outlined, the nonprofit sector works in partnership with government to provide essential services. So if we cut out those grants and contracts that go to nonprofits to deliver those services, the need is still there. We still have to provide those services, and it only makes it more expensive. And so cutting our way out actually makes this whole complicated world that we live in much more expensive. And then there's this next conversation about devaluing innovation and cutting out the opportunities to create those new ideas. And we know that, you know, we always hear the call to action, right? Let's we just need to consolidate. These groups need to merge. We need less of them, right? There's this kind of myth out there that we need more for-profit and less nonprofit and the world would be a better place. And of course, that's myth-making. And so, you know, this whole notion as if that would all save us money. And of course, we know even the idea of consolidation, collaboration, coalition building, all of that takes money and it takes time and it takes energy. And in our office, we're a fan these days of saying, you know, we move at the speed of trust. And, you know, that's so it's not just money. It's the time and energy it takes to build up that those trusting relationships so that we can move forward and have systems change. And I think we're all ready to come to the table. But it's a myth that that will at the forefront save us money. I think in the long run, we have to take a long view here. It will save us money. It'll save us money as a state. There's lots of opportunities to rethink about the systems, kind of move out of our structures and think about system change. I think the nonprofit sector is ready to have those conversations. We've seen lots of great examples of that. We've seen great examples of that in departments within the state. We've seen great examples of partnership with other for-profit companies. But it's a myth that that's going to be on the front end that we're going to save money to do that.
Well, I want to let Rick get in here, and then we'll go back to the phones. We're getting a bunch of callers stacked up. So, Rick, where do you see this intersection between private business, for-profit businesses such as yours, and nonprofits? What's the intersection there?
You know, if a for-profit business isn't profitable, they become a nonprofit, right? So sometimes there isn't that much of a difference.
Oh, poor Lori hates that joke.
I can see her shaking her head over there.
The fact of the matter is cutting is a short-term response. What we require is a long-term plan, and that requires reinvestment. So the previous caller, Dave, I think his name was, said, hey, we're going to have a smaller economy. I don't necessarily think that's true. And I think the partnership there between nonprofit and for-profit is how do we get to this new place? There's a gentleman who's a professor at the Darden School of Business, Dr. Edward Hess, who does a lot of writing on this topic. And he basically said, within 5 years, some of the technical changes are going to take some very bright people and move them into the workforce as entrepreneurs. And so then the question becomes, if we have more entrepreneurs in the market, we're not really, Alaska doesn't have to attract new big corporations. Maybe our lifestyle, our clean air, our environment attracts some of the best and the brightest just because we're a better place to live. And if we've got better bandwidth and we've got better programs and our nonprofit community is strong and then there's a different vision for Alaska. And so there's going to be a strong effort, and this is always the case when there's change, there's a strong effort to protect the status quo because that's what people know, and that's for-profit and nonprofit. But it doesn't have to be that way. And if we create a new vision and start attracting different individuals and a different economy, we could win and be far better off than we have been.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones and see what kind of great ideas Alaskans have out there across the state. Joan is in Kuprianov. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I guess what I really wanted to bring up was how we think through resource extraction mentality in this state. And I guess I would like to highlight a few things that haven't worked. And one of them that's currently, you know, kind of a big deal in Southeast has been the mental health timberlands. And we had to have the lands traded through Congress. And wherever the State Forest Practice Act is in, you know, is like the law of the land, the logging is just atrocious. I mean, it actually wrecks any possibility for fisheries habitat, for sustainable wildlife, you know, for hunting, for fishing, for tourism, and that hasn't worked. And I hope that we, as a state, don't look to cut our forest as a way of trying to get out of some kind of fiscal crisis, because it just, like, eliminates all the other opportunity for that landscape. And one of the things that it's done is it's shrunk southeast to the point now that every time there's a massive clear cut, it's in someone's backyard or in someone's favorite spot. And it's actually pitting one industry against the other. And I guess what I would like to see is let's examine what has, you know, traditionally worked and enhance it. And then maybe think outside the box. And one of the ways maybe we could think outside the box is looking at our forest as maybe a possible sustainable source of revenue through carbon credits. Hmm. And because that's kind of becoming, you know, that's like what we have that a lot of places in the world don't have. And I wanted to bring that up, that brown log export and cutting our forests down just for a one-time quick profit really leaves the region impoverished. So well, thank you. It sounds like great minds thinking about this, and I'll take any comments off the air.
All right. Thanks so much, Joan. I know that there is, in the plan, there is efforts towards forestry, timber growth in that area. But what is the idea there? As Joan noted, if you cut a tree down, that's, you know, a little bit of an economic boost, but it's just a one-time thing. She was discussing ideas that look at a more sustainable use and a broader use and maybe some more innovative ideas about how to use forest lands. What does the plan say in this regard?
Well, I think that the timber industry might disagree with the fact that that's a one-time boost because, timber is a renewable resource.
Right.
We did talk to some of our friends in the forestry industry, and supporting the industry was one of the goal areas and or objectives in the plan. But I think maybe to Joan's point, some of the other things that we talked about were, you know, utilization of forest products for biomass. And energy production in areas where it made sense. One of the action items that was called out in the plan was to was renewable energy and affecting the high costs of energy, which was brought up pretty much statewide, high costs of energy across the state. And so I'm veering a little bit, but what I would say is that one of the action items that were recommended in here is to assess alternative energy options regionally. So that, you know, like a wind farm doesn't work somewhere where there's not enough wind, and utilization of biomass doesn't work somewhere where there's not a sustainable,
sure,
forest. And so, identifying, you know, what some of the alternative energy sources might be in some of these rural communities where it's a good fit for that community, and you can lower energy costs, put people to work, and utilize the resources that exist in that region.
Well, and I should have clarified when I said you cut down a tree and it's a one-time, you know, for that tree, it's a one-time. But, of course, if you're doing sustainable
right.
harvesting and long-term planning, then, of course, you can keep that going. But I think what Joan was also discussing was other uses of the forest, whether that's ecotourism or cultural tourism, perhaps. I know that there's elements of these things in the plan as well, and other ways of looking at forest lands other than just as crops or as harvestable resources.
Sure, and I would say we didn't get down into the weeds too much on that issue, but you're right. So one of our objectives was to sustain and grow the timber and forest products industry in the state, but another one was to grow the visitor industry, and we specifically, some growth areas in the visitor industry are, you know, ecotourism, cultural tourism, adventure tourism, and these are growing trends in the visitor industry, and those are certainly called out, and certainly Forest Service or forest lands across the state are a big part of growing and sustaining a healthy visitor industry too.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, I kind of want to delve into some of that those other ideas about tourism in other places in the state as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank, Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
We are back, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the role of Native corporations in the future of this plan and some of the ideas about cultural tourism, ecotourism in rural Alaska, where the challenge, there's myriad challenges. There's, you know, a lack of road system. There's a lack of infrastructure, hotels, the basic amenities that tourists need so that communities can handle an influx of visitors. What's the thinking around how this challenge can be met, especially in a time of fiscal austerity in the state?
Yeah, you know, well, so I have to, you know, full disclosure, I'm a visitor industry refugee. I spent 10 years in the visitor industry and still call a group that's involved in that industry family for sure. So this one is pretty near and dear to my heart. But in my time working at the state, I've worked with the American Indian Alaska Native Tourism Association, or IANTA, and they have this really cool visitor industry assessment plan. And you'll note in our plan, we call for an increase in sustainable growth in emerging visitor industry sectors, which cultural tourism is of course a part of. But also not, you know, you don't want to force the visitor industry on a place that doesn't necessarily want it. And so one of the things that we recommend is that if communities are looking to expand their cultural tourism in potentially rural areas, that they do one of these visitor industry assessments that's recommended. It was developed by by George Washington University, and kind of the same process that we've gone through with this economic development strategy, which is inclusion and stakeholder involvement, where you assess your community's infrastructure and you know what they can handle.
Sure.
But you also assess the community's desire for it and what level of growth is appropriate. So.
Well, that makes sense. You want to go beyond just what the basic capacity is to what do people really want to see and have in their community. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Sue is in Wrangell. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I'm kind of excited about this idea, and I got a lot of creativity going when I was listening to your show. Last night, my sister told me, and she's on the tribal council here, that they hired somebody to develop the tourism industry from our tribe. And one of the ideas I have is I own a small Thinkit t-shirt business here, and all the tourists complain that there's no seafood restaurants. So I thought it'd be great if we could, have all the native retired fishermen catch fish, and then we have several different kinds of seafood here. Then also get native jet boat operators to give the cultural history of the Thlinkets on the Stikine and how they had to fight the other tribes around here for it. And anyway, I'm really happy to hear this. Thank you.
Wow, I love the ideas that you laid out there. And that's the kind of innovative thinking that I'm sure you're all, I'm seeing a lot of heads nodding around the table here in the studio, and I think that's the kind of idea sparking that you're hoping for. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment in our last few minutes here. Amelia is in Sitka. Hi, Amelia.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have a chance to have a word. I want to make sure, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I took a look at the plan that was on your website really briefly, and it's an impressive plan, very comprehensive. Lots of work has been done over the year to involve communities. I was surprised, though, when I got to the end. There were a couple things missing. I'd love to have seen Sitka. Sitka is where I live now, though I grew up in Petersburg, so I'm a Southeasterner. Sitka was not represented in the list, though they may have been consulted at some point. We are off the main line out here at Sitka, and which means we don't have very regular ferry service. However, that's only just just a part of the picture of being rural and having connections to rural communities in Alaska is a piece that maybe is missing from the plan. As I looked at the, what's it called, the strength SWOT analysis at the end, in the list of strengths, you know, oil, gas, minerals, timber, seafood, tourism, et cetera, but you're not listing the population of Alaska that have invested in our state and have made their homes here. And I wanted to say that that population, I think, are maybe more connected in the rural areas, because I think I agree with the earlier panelists who observed that people, when they have to work on something and solve a problem and the solution's not readily at hand, really have to work together to solve that problem.
They'll figure it out. Yeah.
That happens in rural Alaska. So I wanted to say, you know, there's a big resource that's not listed are people who have made life commitments to Alaska, who benefited from their own family's commitment to living here and learned how to do that and how we've taught, and our children are benefiting from that as well. It's a resource, an economic resource as well. And anyway, that's what I want to say.
Well, thank you so much, Amelia. Great comments, and so true that the human resource is one that we don't want to overlook, because that's what it takes to drive all these other things forward. In our last minute or so, what's the next step now? We've got the state has the 30-day comment period open. What are you hoping to get from people?
Yeah, well, inclusion is the name of the game for this. We have made our very best attempt to be as inclusive around the state as we could, and try to get as much feedback. This is Alaska's plan, and in order for it to be Alaska's plan, we need Alaska voices in the plan. And so, you know, our attempt to reach different communities, you know, if I had my way and resources, I would have been to Sitka and I would have been to Haines. You know, we did have to do some more regional putting together of some of the feedback that we got. So, but here's your chance. You know, we're open for 30-day public comment on this plan, and people's comments will be, you know, integrated into the draft that you see here. So that's my hope, is that we'll get a robust conversation about this and ideas and points that we can integrate into this existing framework of a plan. And moving forward, this plan it's a 5-year plan. It gets revisited and updated every year. So it's far from chiseled in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear the music coming in. So before we before we wrap up, you know, I really want to thank Lori and Rick for being here today, but also our entire strategy committee, who put a lot of work into what you see here. I'm just the center point of disseminating the information that they put together and gave to us. So thanks to them.
I also want to do the same thing. I want to say thank you to our guests today, Ethan Tyler with the Department of Commerce, Lori Wolf, the president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group, Rick Thomas is president and CEO of the Chariot Group. Thanks so much for all of you being here talking about the plan. It's available on our website, alaskapublic.org. So go there, take a look at it, comment on it. Next week on Talk of Alaska, Senator Dan Sullivan will join us to discuss the future of the military in Alaska. Thanks for listening today. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.